my name is Glenn from Infants on Thrones, and you'll never believe what happened to me. One night, as I was kneeling down to pray, I bumped my knee on a really hard rock.
Ow!
And when I looked down to get rid of that damn thing, that damn thing was glowing. So I put it down in my crotch and stuffed my face down real close, and holy cow, you guys, you'll never guess all the groovy things I can see now.
I don't care what you say anymore, this is my life. Go ahead with your own life, leave me alone.
This is Infants on Thrones.
Minisode.
The New Book of Abraham, Infant Styles. First translated from the Papyrus by Joseph Smith, if you can really call it a translation, and then retranslated by Glenn from Infants on Thrones through the Peeping Stone Erastus, which is what I call my Peeping Stone. Seriously, don't ask. Introduction. A translation of some ancient records that have fallen into our hands from the catacombs of Egypt. The real writings of real Abraham while he was really in Egypt. Really written by his own real hand upon real papyrus. I totally promise you guys. So don't tell me that Joseph Smith didn't teach that these Egyptian scrolls were actually written by the actual Abraham. You know, the scrolls that just happened to find their way to Kirtland, Ohio in 1835 and sold to Joseph Smith by Michael Chandler, along with four mummies he was trying to unload that had been excavated from Thebes nearly 30 years earlier. Yeah, that was Abraham, all right. Even if modern Egyptologists claim that the papyri were common funerary texts from a guy named Horus, what do they know? They don't have peeping stones. But then again, neither do most of you, so just listen to what Abraham really actually wrote, okay? And judge for yourself, because here it is. Chapter heading. Abraham wants it all, and he wants it right now, because he's so awesome. He's persecuted for being so awesome. God saves him, because he's so awesome. The origins and government of Egypt are reviewed, naturally, as you would expect in a story about Abraham. Chapter 1. Verse 1. Hey everybody, this is Abraham, for real. And I grew up in the Chaldeans, which was a pre-Babylonian empire from about 900 to 400 BC. Pretty impressive, huh? Seeing as how the Bible places me, Abraham, somewhere around 2000 BC. But let's forget all about that for a minute, because the story starts when I was in Chaldea at my dad's house, and I, Abraham, saw it was time to, you know, get out of Dodge. Verse 2. Why? Well, because I was really pretty righteous and awesome and big and important. And because I wanted to be even more bigger and more important with pretty much all the knowledge in the universe. Not like a dweeby, insufferable know-it-all, but more like a cool, hey, I'll use Abraham as my lifeline. No one beats me at Jeopardy kind of know-it-all. And also, this is sort of embarrassing, but I sort of wanted to be a father of many nations because, you know, isn't that what every kid wants? And I also wanted to be a prince of peace. So, because I wanted all these things, I asked if I could just get ordained to the high priesthood, because that's pretty much what priesthood does for you. Sorry, ladies. Verse 3. But this whole priesthood thing was passed down from the fathers. It came down from the fathers, from the beginning of time. I mean, even from the beginning, from the foundations of the earth, down to the present time. Even the right of the firstborn, or the first man, who was Adam, or the first father, through all of the fathers, unto me, from the beginning. You know, like I said before, and from the fathers. So let's not forget that. Do I need to say it again? Verse 4. So, like I was saying, I went and asked for my appointment unto the priesthood, according to the appointment of God unto the fathers, concerning, you know, the seed. Verse 5. But look, everyone, my jerk-faced fathers had turned from righteousness a long time ago. I should have known that before I asked, right? But they turned from the holy commandments which the Lord their God had given unto them, and now they worship the freaking gods of the heathen. So they utterly refused to hearken to my voice. Maybe I should have seen it coming. Verse 6. Because you know, their hearts were set to do evil, and were wholly turned to the false god of Elkanah, and the false god of Libna, and the false god of Mamakra, and the false god of Koresh. And if you don't believe me that those are really false gods, look it up. Those names don't exist anywhere in history. Just here in this cute little story, written by me, the real Abraham. But those false gods, they aren't real, because, you know, they never were. That's part of what makes them so false. But if you look at the picture illustrating this story that I'm going to put in this book here, you'll see the God-worshipping jars under the altar that I'm about to be sacrificed on. But, oh, dang it, I'm giving it all away. Verse 7. Because look, my jerk-faced fathers had turned their hearts to bloody human sacrifice. No, wait. Bloody virgin sacrifice. Yeah, that's it. And they liked it because, you know, what jerk-faced, unrighteous followers of false gods wouldn't? So they hearkened not unto my voice, but endeavored to take away my life by the hand of the priest of Elkanah. And dude, look, it gets even deeper because the Chaldean priest of Elkanah was also the Egyptian priest of Pharaoh. I don't know how, he just was honest. Verse 8. Now, they really liked human sacrifice, because I'm telling you, man, they were pretty freaking wicked. Verse 9. And it came to pass that the priest made an offering unto the god of Pharaoh, and also unto the god of Shagreel, even after the manner of the Egyptians. Now, the god of Shagreel was the sun, not Ra, like you've probably heard other places. Shagreel, trust me on that. Verse 10. Even the thank offering of a child did the priest of Pharaoh offer upon the altar, which stood by the hill called Potiphar's Hill, at the head of the plain of Olishem, just down the street from Saruman's Bakery at the corner of Highlander Street and Vine. Verse 11. Now, this priest had offered upon his altar three virgins at one time. Three! Who were the daughters of Oneida, one of the royal descent directly from the loins of Ham. Yeah, I said loins. And these virgins were offered up because of their virtue, because they would not bow down to suck on to worship the gods of wood or of stone. Therefore, they were killed upon this altar, and it was done after the manner of the Egyptians, like I said before, because, you know, the Egyptians were all about human sacrifice. I mean, by your day, you'll see all that strewn all about the archaeological records. Ask anyone. Verse 12. And it came to pass that the priests laid violence upon me, and that they might also slay me, as they did those other virgins upon this altar. I told you I was totally righteous, right? And that you may also have knowledge of this altar, I will refer you to the representation at the commencement of this record. Because, man, I freaking love me some picture books. All us papyri-writing 2000 BC prophet guys do. It's an Egyptian thing, y'all. And it's not as easy as it looks. I can't wait till someone reforms this Egyptian thing. Verse 13. Anyway, this terrible altar was made in the form of a bedstead, such as was had among the Chaldeans, and it stood before those false gods of Elkanah, and Libnah, and Machmachra, and Koresh, and also a god like unto that of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. No, those aren't canopic jars. Well, at least not in my day. Who knows what your so-called experts call them now? Verse 14. And so that you can have more of a false understanding of these false gods, I've gone ahead and drawn up the fashion of them in the figures that you're going to see at the beginning, which manner of figures is called by the Chaldeans Ralinos, which signifies hieroglyphics, and are usually drawn in the morning around breakfast time. And interesting side note, Chaldeans who draw Ralinos are called Carolinos, or sometimes Cheerios for short. And that's where the name of that Cheerios breakfast cereal came from. Verse 15. And as they lifted up their hand upon me, that they might take away my life, behold, I lifted up my voice unto the Lord my God, and the Lord hearkened and heard me, because I was way more awesome and big and important than those three virgins I told you about before, who also lifted up their voices. But come on, God can't save everyone, right? And he filled me with the vision of the Almighty, and the angel of his presence stood by me and immediately unloosed my bands like Houdini, and I was free. Verse 16. And his voice was unto me, Abraham, Abraham, behold, my name is Jehovah. Nice to meet you. And I've heard thee, and I've come down to deliver thee, and to take thee away from thy father's house and from all thy kinsfolk into a strange land, which thou knowest not of. Because, look, Abraham, this is what I want everyone around you to know, and you're going to be a prophet, so I want you to tell them all this. Okay? the people I love best, the people that follow me, well, I'll always ask them to move around, you know? Whether it's from some place in the distant future like New York or Pennsylvania to a place like, I don't know, Kirtland, Ohio or something. If you guys flee the place of your fathers and move into a new place to start a new religion, well, that's sort of a pretty decent indication that I'm in your corner. So just let everybody know that, okay, Abraham? Would you do that for me, please? Because I'm sort of busy.
Verse 17.
Busy at being pissed at all the wicked people who turn away from me and turn their hearts to worship false gods like Elkanah or Libna or Obama. Therefore, I have come down to visit them and to destroy them who have lifted up his hand against thee, Abraham, my son, to take away thy life.
Verse 18.
Behold, I will lead thee by my hand, and I will take thee to put upon thee my name, even the priesthood of thy father, which my power shall be over thee.
Verse 19.
As it was with Noah, so shall it be with thee. But through thy ministry, my name shall be known in the earth forever, for I am thy God. Over and out.
Verse 20.
Behold, Potiphar's hill was in the land of Ur of the Chaldea, like I said before, and the Lord broke down the altar of Elkanah and the gods of the land and utterly destroyed them and smote the priest that he died, just like that. And there was a great mourning in Chaldea and also thousands of miles away in the court of Pharaoh, which Pharaoh signifies king by royal blood, which may seem like an abrupt and awkward transition to go from ancient Babylon all the way over to Egypt, but I've got to make a connection between Abraham and Egyptian stuff somehow, and besides, I've got some super interesting and totally profound things that God wants me to tell you all, okay?
Verse 21.
Like that this king of Egypt was a descendant from the loins of Ham, and was a partaker of the blood of the Canaanites by birth. You know, black people. A partaker of the blood of black people.
Verse 22.
From this descent sprang all the Egyptians, and thus the black blood of the black Canaanites was preserved in the land.
Verse 23.
And I swear, you guys, this isn't racist or sexist at all, but the original land of Egypt was originally founded by a woman, by a black woman, who was the daughter of Ham and the daughter of Egyptus, which in the Chaldean signifies Egypt, which signifies that which is forbidden. Did you guys know that? That Egypt means forbidden. And I'll tell you why, but first let's hear more about this woman who discovered a forbidden land.
Verse 24.
When this woman discovered the land, it was underwater, who afterwards settled her sons on it. And thus, from Ham sprang that race which preserved the curse in the land. You know, the darkies again. And here's where it gets all forbidden and stuff.
Verse 25.
Because the first government of Egypt was established by Pharaoh, the eldest son of Egyptus, the daughter of Ham. And look, I'll be honest with you. I don't know if this means that Ham fathered children with his own daughter named Egyptus. I honestly wouldn't put it past him. Or if Ham had a wife and a daughter, both named Egyptus, or what. Maybe it was just a really popular name that year. But either way, they were no good. I'm telling you that because they set up this government after the manner of Ham, which copied the patriarchal order of things when it wasn't supposed to copy the patriarchal order of things, right?
Verse 26.
Because Pharaoh, he was sort of an okay guy in the beginning, and he established his kingdom and judged his people wisely and justly all his days, seeking earnestly to imitate that order established by the fathers in the first generations, in the days of the first patriarchal reign, even the reign of Adam, and also of Noah, his father, who blessed him with the blessings of the earth and with the blessings of wisdom, but cursed him as pertaining to the priesthood.
Verse 27.
Now Pharaoh, being of that lineage by which he could not have the right of the priesthood, you know, at least not until some future 1978 date when it will be okay for them to have it, but notwithstanding, the pharaohs would fain claim it from Noah through Ham, wherefore my very own father, thousands of miles away in Chaldea, was led away by their idolatry, which may not seem to make a lot of sense to you, but trust me, it does. And if you say it doesn't, then you're the worst kind of person there could possibly be.
Verse 28.
Now you know me, the big and important, awesome Abraham. So, nice to meet you. And now what I want to do is pretty much tell you everything that happened from the beginning of time until right now, in my real day, as I really sit with my real hand and really write this on real papyri, because I have the records that other big and important people wrote before me. Because it's all about records and continuing the story, right? So that's what I'm going to do. Verse 29. Now, after the priest of Elkanah was smitten that he died, there came a fulfillment of those things which were said unto me concerning the land of Chaldea, that there should be a famine in the land. And I mean, I know I didn't tell you before that this had been a prophecy and it was fulfilled, but it was, and trust me, it really was fulfilled. Verse 30. So, because of this famine, my father was sorely tormented. And guess what? He repented of the evil which he had determined against me to take away my life. Isn't that cool? Verse 31. But the records of the fathers, even the patriarchs concerning the right of the priesthood, well, the Lord my God preserved that in my own hands, not my dad's. Because even though he repented, he still wasn't anywhere near as big or important as I was. So that's how a knowledge of the beginning of the creation came to me. But not only that, I'm also going to tell you about the planets and the stars, and that's some really cool stuff that you're not going to want to miss. So stay tuned, because this stuff is about to get really real, for real.
Feel it, and you'll know it's all true. You'll just feel it. You'll be a Mormon. By gosh, a Mormon. Just believe.
A Mormon.
Oh, I believe.
A Mormon.
I
Hi, this is Sarah from Colorado Springs, Colorado, and I am an English girl hopelessly lost in a conservative American world. You can comment on this episode on the website infantsonthrones.com, and if you really like what you hear, give the quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. Anyone for the closing prayer?
I'll bet you really can't wait for chapter 2. Well, you're going to have to.
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.